and welcome to another edition of the Security Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. The drumbeat of warnings about hackers and nation-states making incursions into the U.S. electrical grid and other critical infrastructure has become more steady in recent weeks. Last week, for example, the Department of Homeland Security and FBI issued an Amber Alert warning energy companies about spear phishing attacks designed to steal sensitive credentials. That was followed by reports that named a number of facilities as targets, including the Wolf Creek nuclear facility in Kansas. The report cited current and former U.S. officials describing a range of threats, including phishing emails, watering hole websites, and man-in-the-middle attacks designed to steal credentials from high-value employees for use mapping out the networks of critical infrastructure providers. While alarming, the attacks are nothing new. Indeed, similar attacks have been leveled against electrical grid and other critical infrastructure operators for more than 5 years. So what, if anything, is new or different with the latest reports? And is an attack that takes out part or all of the U.S. electrical grid a real possibility, or just more FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt? This is a complex area, and there aren't that many people who really understand it, but we were able to find one.
Joe Weiss, managing partner of Applied Control Solutions. I also happen to be the managing director of ISA 99, which is the International Standards on Control System Cybersecurity. Critical infrastructure, be it nuclear plants, conventional plants, SCADA systems, substations, refineries, are constantly under cyber attack. That's nothing new. What makes the paper is when somebody does get through, and generally when it makes the paper, it's because they got through and something happened on the business LAN. You very rarely hear about anything when cyber actually gets to the control systems.
So help us understand these facilities or these companies. They have traditional IT networks to run the operations of the company, human resources and finance and IT and so on. But then they also have, you know, the physical facilities and equipment that they run. And are those two things linked in most cases or totally separate?
They used to be totally separate. They are starting to converge. There's a lot being said about what's called IT and OT, IT being information technology, OT being operational technology, convergence. And there should be segmentation and isolation, in other words, firewalls, etc., to try to prevent any communications getting into control system networks from the outside, you know, from the internet or a business LAN, so that you don't have, if you will, a lower security zone trying to talk to a higher security zone, because that's kind of a recipe for disaster.
Just to finish tying the ribbon here, the reports that we've heard this week are really about attacks and surveillance of business networks rather than industrial control system networks. Is that right?
That's correct for the report that you heard about the nuclear plant. However, as early as October 2014, we've had malware in grid control network. So you've got malware there that's basically been monitoring and potentially exfiltrating information about these really critical control systems that control grids and other things. And that's been there since October 2014. In fact, DHS actually had a notification in their May-June DHS monitor saying, don't connect to the internet, because that's how black energy got into our electric grids. That was DHS being very specific.
So is there anything new here, Joe, from your perspective with these most recent reports? Is there a increase in activity? Is this more serious than the types of incursions we've seen previously?
There's a lot of things that have been going on over the past several years, and obviously over the past several months. And that is, you know, the hacker world and a number of nation states are being much, much more aggressive in their probing or hacking of networks. You know, you have things like Crash Override, which was designed specifically to go after, in this case, electric grids to start with, to at least cause electric outages. I'm trying to be a little bit clear or parse my words a little bit about the difference between damaging, large equipment that could cause very long-term outages versus shutting the lights off for hours or maybe a day or so. There's certainly more activity now, and I think you can expect the activity level to increase. Now, that's just my expectation. And adding to that, there is simply more information available on how to hack these systems so that there are more people looking to do that. And with one additional caveat, if you will, we still don't have a sufficient amount of cybersecurity protection for these critical systems. It's a very bad combination.
So the attacks on the grid that we've seen so far, for example, in the Ukraine, have mostly been manipulating IT systems to shut off the lights. But you're talking about, actually, there's a whole other level of attack in which you use the software systems to physically damage equipment so that basically you can't continue using it. You just have to replace it. That's what you mentioned with the Aurora attack. Explain why that's a much bigger deal than what we've seen, for example, in Ukraine.
If there is no damage to large, if you will, long-term equipment like transformers, motors, generators, you can bring the grid back up within hours, okay? But what you're talking about there is almost like, if you will, an ice storm or a hurricane or whatever. You're out and you need to bring the grid back. But if there's no damage to large equipment, you can do that fairly quickly. You know, that's what happened in the Ukraine in the first case. You know, the lights were out for 6 hours, and I believe the second time they were out for about an hour. There are also two other things involved, or another thing involved, and that was in the Ukraine, you still had people who could run the systems in manual. That is really questionable in the States because so much has been automated. So in the Ukraine, they've been running their grids now in manual, probably for over a year now, because of these hacks. Could we do that here? It's an open question.
So you said they haven't really gone back to fully automated operation just out of fear of future attacks, or just because the attacks are more or less constant?
I think it's both. You know, basically what's happening is there is a tendency, if you're not sure that things are going to be okay, to keep a very close hold and close watch on things. And the Ukraine has been being turned into essentially a cyber war game range. So it makes it difficult to feel confident enough to go back and let automation run everything. It's not to say there isn't automation, but it's certainly not at the level that was before December 2015, or certainly December 2016. You know, like I say, there's been a lot of discussion, you know, especially add all of that to the baby boomers retiring. There's a real question. If you had to run the grids or run all of these systems, whether it's the grid or refineries, pipelines, you name it, if you had to do all of that in manual, would you have the people with the capabilities or experience to do that? That's an open question.
Could most U.S. Energy companies, electrical companies, operate their infrastructure manually as they're doing in Ukraine if they needed to?
I'm going to leave it with saying it's an open question, and each company was going to have to answer that. I can tell you this. There have been ongoing programs for the past 20 years of how do we capture the knowledge of the people that are going to be retiring. You know, one of the problems we've got is the loss of the knowledge, if you will, the first principles knowledge of how and why these systems were designed as they were.
Are changes being made to make the U.S. critical infrastructure more resilient, or is there a disconnect between the threat and the readiness posture of the owners' operators?
My belief is there is still a major disconnect between the risk and the current posture. Part of that can be seen with the NERC critical infrastructure protection standards for the electric industry. They're not changing very much, and they're still allowing access to the internet. We really still don't have the ability to know how secure our supply chain is, and there are still all kinds of exclusions for what would fall under the purview of the cybersecurity regulations. One of the things, you know, where this whole conversation started dealt with power plants. There are a lot of exclusions for many, many, many power plants to be able to avoid, you know, to have to meet any cybersecurity requirements, because the NERC cybersecurity requirements have what's called a bright line. If you're bigger than that quote-unquote bright line, whether it's for a power plant or a substation, then theoretically you have to meet these cybersecurity standards. If you're smaller than that bright line, you don't have to. I hate to say it, it's kind of a roadmap for the hackers.
I know in the past there was a distinction between generation and distribution, so power generators were bound by the NERC critical infrastructure protection or SIP standards, but organizations that merely distributed the power that they generated, which is what most of us would think of as power companies, they were not.
That is correct. And part of that is really due to Congress, in a sense, because what you have is a states' rights issue. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, has responsibility for bulk power, if you will, interstate power, which would be transmission. The states have responsibility for local distribution, so the NERC SIPs only apply to generation. There are no real cybersecurity requirements for distribution. And as for generation, all nuclear plants are outside the scope of NERC SIP. They're governed by NRC requirements. And when you start talking like with wind farms, each of the generators in a wind farm is much below that threshold. And one of the unfortunate things that's happening is, and NERC has actually participated in this, is given generators an out by basically giving them, here's a rationale for saying that you don't meet the size requirements for this bright line. And so instead of NERC actively trying to protect the grid, which is supposedly its responsibility for reliability, they're actually helping people avoid having to meet those requirements. That's backwards.
Is there any way for somebody to know, here's my local power company, whether it's a municipal electric, which is what I have in where I am in Massachusetts, or a bigger regional power company, anywhere to know what their posture is vis-a-vis cybersecurity, whether they've done an audit, whether they have are adhering to best practices? Are there any requirements for them to file or make attestations about things like that?
Not publicly.
Yes.
You can go to the NERC requirements, and it will tell you by size or importance what would fall into the requirements for having to meet the SIPs. And if you find that your local utility just doesn't have anything that meets those size requirements, they wouldn't have a requirement to do anything. It's not to say that they're not. It's just to say they wouldn't have a requirement to do anything.
In your mind, what's a worst-case scenario? What does a bad day look like from Joe Weiss's perspective?
Okay. A very bad day, and I'm not trying to say the sky is falling. I'm an engineer. What I will tell you is what can be done. What I won't tell you is, because I can't, I don't know how, to tell you why somebody would or wouldn't. But when you look at something like Aurora, that's how you can bring the grid down for 9 to 18 months. Now, can you really do that today? The answer is yes.
You think you can?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Period. And it doesn't help that DHS declassified 843 pages on Aurora. And that's on hacker website.
Just the background, that was an accident where they received I think, Freedom of Information Act request about one of the very early APT, quote, APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat Attacks,
right,
on Google that somehow got the code name Aurora. And they received a Freedom of Information Act request and confused it with the test that you're talking about, Idaho National Labs test,
mm-hmm,
and they released that information instead.
Yeah, and let me also clarify one other thing. Aurora is a relay issue. It's not malware. Four of our major relay vendors, you know, I'm not saying every relay vendor, but certainly four of them that pretty much own most of the market, all have cyber vulnerable relays to this day. Number two, we don't have security or authentication in the process sensing. The third piece is that black energy is in our grids. The bad guys know what's there. One of the justifications for years has been, well, transmission is much too complex. Remember, distribution is outside scope. But the bad guys have been monitoring and exfiltrating data for the past 2 years. They know what's there.
What are the steps by which a U.S. gets a grasp on the threats to its critical infrastructure and gets to be in a position where at least we're dealing with known knowns and addressing the risks that we can anticipate?
It's a wonderful question and as complicated as can be. Part of it is because cyber is so dynamic. It's why do you have 0 days after all of these years where vendors think and would swear to you that they've addressed all of the cyber vulnerabilities, yet you still have 0 days? There are a lot of unexpected unknowns. And the problem is, will the good guys find those unexpected unknowns before the bad guys find those unexpected unknowns? This is really different than many years ago before cyber was around. And it was, is the equipment mechanically and electrically sound or is there a problem? There was a one time you looked and you could fix it. What you'll see today is DHS will put out through ICS Cert vulnerability disclosures. And they have vulnerability disclosures probably at least every other week. And it will cover almost all of our control system vendors. And they'll keep finding new ones. So this thought about how do you eliminate the unknown unknowns is very difficult. This issue of lack of process sensing, you know, and it's like, how can that be when theoretically, so I'm just saying, when you're asking, it's somewhat of a losing battle. I just put a blog out somewhat to that extent. What we're not doing enough of is resiliency and recovery. You know, there's still too much of this thought process. We'll prevent it. No, we won't.
Joe, you talked about the supply chain risks for these critical industries, you know, energy, power generation, and so on. What mm-hmm. does that look like? I mean, we know what the supply chain looks like for, let's say, an automobile, but what are we talking about here with these critical infrastructures?
Where do the chips come from? What's on the chips? You know, when you make a control system, it's a control system of bits and pieces. And then you have vendors who make equipment, and they provide what's called skid-mounted equipment. So they'll make, for example, a compressor. But that compressor is going to have sensors from another vendor. It's going to have a... Or you can look at it like with an airplane. Boeing makes the airplane, but it's GE or Pratt & Whitney or Rolls-Royce who makes the engine.
So long equipment supply chains that involve both hardware, increasingly with sensors attached to it, as well as software to manage the hardware.
Absolutely. And software is coming from all over the world.
So Black Hat, the big hacker conference, released a survey today of their attendees or registered attendees. Mm-hmm. 60% of information security professionals say cyber attack on U.S. critical infrastructure to occur in the next 2 years. And around a quarter feel like the U.S. government military is prepared to deal with that. Do you more or less concur?
Well, first of all, will there be a major attack within the next 2 years? I go back and I take the fifth and say, I'm an engineer. I just don't know how to say whether somebody will or won't. Can they? Absolutely. The can is a 100%. The will is what I don't know how to address.
So as long as there's motive, you just don't know what the motive would be, but the means is there.
The means are there. There is absolutely no question whatsoever at all that the means are there. I just don't know how to answer the motive question.
Okay.
And the second thing is, will DOD be able to save us? They've already stated, you know, for a sophisticated attack, no. I'm not making anything up. This is what they've already said.
Said where, just to clarify?
Well, there was a cybersecurity report. Again, it's not classified because I have no access to classified material. But there was a Defense Science Board report a few months ago that basically said, no, we can't really prevent a sophisticated cyber attack from places like Russia or China against critical infrastructure. That was flat statement.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, they can't prevent the attack. The question is, could they thwart or severely limit the impact of the attack? I guess those are somewhat different questions.
Now, if you look at things like Aurora, no, not really. It really depends on what the attack is. If it's a slow attack and they're only trying to steal data or cause short-term outage, yeah, but what do you do when they've already destroyed transformers and generators? That happens. That can happen in seconds.
Right. Joe Weiss, thank you, as always, for taking the time to speak with me in the Security Ledger. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for reaching out.
We were speaking with Joe Weiss of Applied Control Solutions about this week's warnings of hacks of the U.S. electrical grid and critical infrastructure.